And now, the KHMB Feature Story of the Week. A look at people and events making a difference on the coastside.
The KHMB Feature Story of the Week is brought to you by the all-new Granola's Coffee House, located on Highway 1 next to BK Motors in Half Moon Bay. Granola's Coffee House, featuring specialty coffees, fresh baked goods, and free Wi-Fi.
At the end of the year, we like to look back over the stories we have covered and pick out one that was extra special. Actually, we have chosen two from 2015. One, a serious and somber subject, the other on the lighter side. Our first feature story, Encore, was first aired on October the 1st. Our feature story of the week spotlights Naomi Patridge. Most know her for her public service, 25 years on the Half Moon Bay City Council, 7 of those years serving as mayor. But what we don't know about Naomi Patridge is that because of her Japanese ancestry, she and her family were part of the fear that gripped the country at the outbreak of World War II following the attack by Japan on Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, that sparked our entry into war. Many Japanese living on the coastside were rounded up and put in camps for the duration of the war. Naomi was invited to share her story at a recent meeting of the Half Moon Bay History Association. The following is a portion of that presentation.
I want to thank all of you for coming to hear my story. I've done a lot of research on the whole internment camp, especially Topaz. That's where we were relocated. And I have done talks. Every year I used to do talks to the high school junior class. I just found that it was interesting that a lot of people did not know about the internment. I originally came from Pescadero. Our family had a large ranch, actually farm, which my dad had. He farmed. And you could see the building that we used to have prior to our internment. Father lost all of that. It was hundreds of acres and everything, the house, everything, because he was not there to make payment to the bank for the properties. So a lot of Japanese people lost all of their property, all of their goods, basically because they had no way paying in the bank loans. When my mom was in Pescadero, she got a message, and she didn't understand because she didn't speak English. Found my father, and at that point was told that we need to be at the Williamson store with one suitcase. And we had a family of 5 people, 3 kids and 2 adults. For those of you that don't know Pescadero prior to the war was a lot of Japanese people. It had a Japanese school, it had a Japanese temple, the Buddhist temple, and it also had a dojo. Our number was 21855. So every family had a number that they had to put on themselves and on all their belongings. So from the Williamson store, we were taken to Tamforan Racetrack from April to September 1942. And I think the reason why the government chose the racetrack was because of the convenience of the enclosure of the racetracks. It is totally enclosed and, you know, you could house people there, even if it was in the horse stalls. But there was also the ability to have people sit in the grandstands to eat and do those kind of things. However, their lack of understanding, the lack of restroom facilities, and also the inability to clean the horse stalls when people were coming to live there. We were very fortunate because we had a family of 3 kids. We got one of the newer stalls that did not have horse manure in it and was whitewashed. So all the other horse stalls that didn't house families were whitewashed with horse manure and everything there. As people were being held there for that long of a time, people were starting to get sick, get diarrhea because of the health conditions. When we were there, the families were asked 3 questions. Depending on how you answered those 3 questions, determined where you were going to be placed. Either in a high security camp, or just a regular camp. And the people that said that they were still loyal to Japan went to the high security camps. From Tamforan Racetrack, we went to Topaz, Utah by train. The windows were all blackened, so you didn't know where in the heck you were going. But we were there from September 29th to October 11th, 1945. When we got there, the barrack, there was no furnishings, there was no walls. You had to go get straws to make your bed. There was a potbelly stove. And of course, in this shorter time, they were not able to have sewer. So they had ditches, which were like in front of barracks and stuff, and they had planks. So when you went across, you had to be careful so you didn't fall into the sewer things. There was 12 barracks in a block, and we were in block 25, and I think it was 33, I can't remember, but and I think we got moved because my brother was born there, which gave us 6 in our family. We had 5. But in every block, there was 12 buildings, a laundry room, they called latrines and showers, and a dining hall. But in the restrooms, there was no privacy. There were no stalls. So it was kind of like just open. It was kind of like really hard. You had no identity, what building you were in, where you were at, and all that kind of stuff. They had kids help the older people, especially to find the residence. And in the camp, it was not a really nice, pleasant kind of environment. It was a high wall security with barbed fence, and there was towers where guards stood with guns. And they did shoot a little girl in Topaz. When that happened, with the government, the block government people and stuff, decided to start nursery schools because the little kids had nowhere to go and nothing to do. And so I was one of the ones that did go to the nursery school. My mother hand sewed those clothes and she made her own pattern because they're going to have taking pictures of us. And so since we didn't have any clothes, she made them. So it was really great. I don't know if you know about Japanese culture. We are very proud, respectful people. And we take death as being respectful. And so during that time, there was a lot of Japanese elder people that did commit suicide. And it was not frowned upon. It was an honor because they were not going to be a burden on anybody. And they respectfully felt that they needed to go to peace. I think one of the hardest things was the weather that we had to endure. It was 106 in the summer and 30 degrees below, and the wind was horrific. So you would take one step forward and blow back two. And then there were schools for people. They did have a high school, elementary school, and all that. And we did not have great food. We had liver and mutton. As you know, Japanese like rice and vegetables. And so they did have some of the gardens and things, but I don't think we had as much rice. To this day, I hate liver. I love liver, but I hate lamb because it was not lamb. It was mutton. It was old stuff that stunk. One of the things that they did in the camp was they had block government. And so every block had their own government, and they governed themselves, which I think was really good because this way they could handle whatever problems and things that they were having in the 12 barracks. Everybody had a job. My father was a cook. I'll tell you, he was a great cook when he came out, and he was probably a great baker. I have never seen anybody take a roll of dough and for pies and roll it out one time and it was perfect. And so my brother was born in the camp, and there was a tragedy. In the camp, there was no stoves or anything, and so everything was like with an electric cord or on a potbelly stove or whatever. And my little brother, when he was an infant, pulled the hot water off the stove, and he was scalded. And because he was a boy, and this is what my mother said, they did do all the surgery and graft on his face, but not on his neck or on his arms. So to this date, he still has that scar. One of the things that I remember the most about the camp is the baseball games on Sunday. And maybe that's why I have that love for softball and baseball, you know, to this date. And I know that everybody really suffered, but I don't think anybody suffered as much as the Japanese nationality when it came to the war and the loss of their property, their money, and all that. And a lot of people have never been able to recoup that. My dad never was able to recoup all that he had. And I, you know, people have asked me, do you think this would ever happen again? And I say yes. And let me tell you why. I don't think it would be as drastic as it was to the Japanese family. However, we have this, and I hate to say it, Clay, we have media and social media that puts fear into people. And fear does lots of things. We've seen it happen here in Half Moon Bay. I've seen it happen on city council. And fear, no matter how much you try to correct or get information out, never happens unless the fear is gone. And until we can get rid of that emotion, this can happen again.
When you think about it, you can sit and kind of think all the things that have happened, but I don't hold any grudges, basically because my mom and dad didn't. If they probably did, I probably would have, because you know how I am.
Naomi Patrick, with her reflections on what it was like to be a Japanese child in an internment camp during World War II. You can hear her entire presentation by going to khmbradio.com and under Shows, click on Special Broadcast. Naomi Patrick, our feature story of the week. Our next 2015 feature story encore centered on a horse, one that we have all seen, and the man behind the horse of a different color. We've all seen it. It's that horse at Lemos Farms. Every time we drive home on Highway 92, there it is, the horse. But wait, today it's different. A different color, different message. We sent KHMB reporter Peter Finch to get the rest of the story, a story we call A Horse of a Different Color.
Begin with, tell me who you are.
My name is Phil Davis, and I live in San Mateo, California with my wife, Judy.
An artist slash educator. Right?
Correct.
And I'm interviewing you in front of the horse at Lemos Farms here. Why is that?
Well, I've been painting the horse for about 10 years now, and it seems to get a lot of attention.
What's the story with the horse here? You've been doing it 10 years. Do you know the history of this?
Well, actually, Bob Lemos got this horse at the San Mateo County Fair, and it was perfect for the farm. And one day he said, why don't we paint it for Christmas? So I painted it to look like Santa. We painted it for other holidays, and it took off from there, and now it gets painted once a month.
Once a month, and how often is it your design that's on there?
I would say out of the 12 designs a year, I design it 9 or 10 times, and Bob always chimes in with good ideas, and occasionally we get another person's idea for the horse, and if we like it, we use it.
So what's it like having a horse as a canvas?
It's a little tricky because of the curvature of the horse, but I've learned over the years, I design it first, I do a sketch, and then I do a small painting on illustration board so that there's no mistakes in what I'm doing.
What themes do you explore? How do you think of, all right, what should I do to this horse next?
Well, that's the interesting part. It's easy to do it for Christmas or the 4th of July. And by the way, those are two of my favorite holidays to paint for. But, you know, Mother's Day, I've done roses. I've painted. We have a small pony here on the farm that I've brought out before and used for Mother's Day. So we have the large horse, mother, and the baby horse. So it's over the years, it's become a little bit of a challenge to come up with new ideas. So, but I try to come up with different and varied ideas.
Well, and what have been some of your favorites?
One of my favorites was a horse skeleton for Halloween. I did an elf horse for Christmas where my wife and I actually ordered some elf shoes. And I took those shoes and sewed them to the hooves of the horse. So those are two of my all-time favorites.
As an artist, is it, what do you make of all this? I mean, there are people, you know, driving by here every day seeing your work of art, you know. You like that?
Yeah, it actually pleases me that people seem to really enjoy it. I didn't really think it would take off like this. But people honk when I'm painting. They stop and they, oh, I love the horse. I stop and take photographs. So it really makes me happy that people seem to enjoy it. And especially because they're driving by kind of fast, you know, but that they take the time to stop and say hi.
Now, I don't want to be so crass as to ask you how much you get paid to do it, but are you remunerated? Do you get?
Yes, it's, I won't mention how much. People think, oh, you must make, but it's anywhere between $150 to $200 per horse. Right. So I'm not complaining.
And as an artist, yeah, people are seeing your work. And
you know what? Getting paid to do your art is something I've always enjoyed doing.
Do not enough artists get paid what they should, do you feel?
Oh, probably not. Art is so subjective. I mean, you either like it or you don't like it. But what I like about this is people seem to like it for the most part.
Now, normally you've got, you know, yourself, you're the primary artist here, and then there are other folks. I hear on certain occasions, and I'm trying to remember the story correctly, but either the son or the grandson wanted to ask a girl to the prom, and do you know that story?
I sure do. Actually, that kind of started this whole publicity thing on the horse. Frank Lemos, Bob Lemos's oldest son, wanted to invite a young lady to the prom, and he wanted to do it in a different way. So he had me paint a tuxedo on the horse, and then I came back weeks later and painted her name on it. And so it was kind of a nice surprise, and she did say yes. That was a big question. Did she say yes? She did, so everything was good. Otherwise, she would have blamed it on the horse.
That's a good point. Special requests like that, aside from that, are you pretty much given free rein, to use an equine term there?
Yeah, I think so. Bob says, go ahead and design something, and I do, and it usually comes out pretty well.
And apparently he gets what he wants out of it. It's a good way to advertise the farm, or, you know, as tourists flock to the Half Moon Bay area, kind of stands out. It's like, oh, let's stop here.
Yeah, it is. And I have to tell you, Bob Lemos is the key behind this horse. He's been a really wonderful person, and I really appreciate all his support doing this.
Does the horse have a name, by the way?
Actually, it has two names. One of them is Old Paint. And the other one, we call it a horse of a different color. And that, of course, is from The Wizard of Oz.
Right. Do you prefer one or the other?
I kind of like Old Paint because I'm getting old and so it seems to work.
How many coats of paint are there on this horse?
Now, that is a question that I have been asked. And there are hundreds of coats of paint because this horse gets primed before I paint it. And then when I do paint it, each color that people see gets two and sometimes three layers. So it has hundreds of layers of paint on it.
So what do you want to see people take away from your horse of a different color as they pass by here?
Well, I just want them to enjoy. I think I like the fact that we change it every month and they get to see something new. It's kind of like a real nice billboard as they drive by. As they drive to and from work every day. People enjoy seeing it when they're on their way home from work.
Yeah. So if you give them a little smile,
why not?
And this is horse country.
Absolutely. Phil Davis, what a pleasure to meet you. It's great knowing the guy who more often than not has worked on the horse of a different color here.
Well, I sure appreciate it, Mr. Finch. Thank you very much.
For KHMB Radio, I'm Peter Finch.
Peter Finch and an interview with Phil Davis, the man responsible for maintaining that local work of arts at Lemos Farms, the horse of a different color, our feature story of the week. There you have it, our salute to some of our favorite feature stories of 2015. This is Jim Henderson, and on behalf of the men and women who help produce our weekly radio magazine, thank you so much for letting us serve you. And now, as we come to the end of another year, we flash back to still another time and a different year, courtesy of Cameron Palmer and the KHMB Time Machine. Next, on your hometown community station, AM and FM, KHMB Radio.
You've been listening to the KHMB Feature Story of the Week. Know someone who deserves to be recognized in the community? Call us today at 453-4000 or email us news@khmbradio.com.